Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addisk, to bring you opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events on this very fine day of Friday, October 18th, 2013. During the first segment today, we're going to talk about the euro. That is getting awfully strong. What can happen when that begins to weaken a little bit? During the second segment, we're going to talk about cash. And the third segment is kind of the ending of the debt limit crisis for a couple months anyway. So lots of things to talk about today. But let's first get started. Let's first get started on the financial markets today. Gold today down about $4 at $1,316. You have silver up 2 cents today at $2,201. Platinum was up $3 at $14.43, and palladium was up a buck at $745. We did have a high of gold today at $13.22, but couldn't keep the hold, but not a bad after the large increase we saw yesterday. The USDX today is trading down slightly lower at 0.03 at $79.63. Crude oil is still around the 100 level, 100 and some change. Paper markets today, didn't have a chance to follow the paper markets today, so I'm sure they're probably all up today. The tech stocks rallied. Google hits 1,000. Holy smokes. The Dow was up 27 points today at 15,399. The NASDAQ was up 51, 1.3% at 39.14. Yeah, the S&P up 11 at 1744, 10-year yield, say that fast three times, 2.59. NASDAQ, yeah, they're going to push that to 5. It's closing in on that 4. We'll see what happens once it gets closer to that 5. But then, you know what, folks, all we're going to hear about is, woo-hoo, the NASDAQ hit 5. And, of course, we know the last time it hit 5, it crashed all the way down. So 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. Give us a call, folks. Many of you have taken advantage of our specials this week. I want to thank each and every one of you. And again, those listeners who didn't partake in the specials this week, that's okay. We appreciate your support. And the listeners, we always appreciate you too. And all of the orders of this month, remember, we'll be going into a drawing at the end of the month. For Mint State 62, $10 Indian, and a tube of Silver Eagles. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody. No surprise in the market today. It's all kind of flat.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Not much change, but the dollar hasn't jumped back up. Took a nice hit yesterday. It's a 79.63 today. It does not necessarily prove anything, but you know, it's evidence of at least a temporary decline. That 80 figure in the U.S. dollar index apparently is where government wants to hold the line. They've fallen a little below the line in the last day or two. We'll see what happens on Monday, if they can push it back up or not. But it will be interesting, because we've got one article we're going to probably start with today talking about the euro rally could break, put a break on recovery. This is from the Associated Press. They're just talking about the euro pushed up above $1.37 on Friday, which means it costs $1.37 to buy a euro. First time this has happened since February, in a move that analysts say could crimp the single currency zone's recovery from recession. Now, the reason for this is because if the euro becomes more valuable, then it means that European goods aren't as easily exported. If you have a product that you're selling for 10,000 euros and the market is willing to buy it, the global market is willing to buy your product made in Europe for 10,000 euros, but the euro, the value of the euro goes up. And even though your product is still selling for 10,000 euros, relatively speaking, the cost is increased. All right? Still 10,000, but it's 10,000 of a more valuable euro. Instead of selling for a price of 10,000 euros that were worth, say, a buck a piece, they're selling for 10,000 euros that are worth $1.37 each, which means the cost of the product has actually gone up by 37%, and that means people aren't going to want to buy that European export. They'll be less able to. Now, the bad thing about this, well, first off, just the euro's currency has garnered support this year thanks to an easing in the continent's debt crisis and a return to economic growth. However, in recent days, its appreciation against the dollar has accelerated as the U.S. government struggled to raise the country's debt ceiling. The debt ceiling put the dollar down, caused the dollar to depreciate to some degree, become less valuable, because people are losing confidence in the dollar. They're saying the people in Washington can't run the economy. They're running things right up to a deadline, and then in a way that was perhaps completely unnecessary, perhaps imprudent. And people are doubting whether this country is being properly managed. And as a result, they lose confidence in the country, they lose confidence in the dollar, and they tend to get away from it. They say the dollar is not worth a dollar anymore. Compared to what it was worth a month ago, today it's only worth 95 cents, or maybe even 90 cents. Now, I'm just pulling the numbers out of the air. I'm not saying that's a real consideration. But beyond that, they are anticipating that the dollar will continue to decline in value. And therefore, they're saying, I want to get away from it. I don't want to be caught holding dollars. Why would I want to hold a $100 bill if a year from now it only had $90 in purchasing power as compared to today? Don't want it. So people are stepping back away from the dollar, and when they do, what do? They run to something like the euro, or they run to gold. Right? Gold makes sense. Euro does not, to my mind, but nevertheless, that's the way people think on these things. And part of the implication is that the world is so interconnected that you can't simply do things anymore in a way where you can anticipate the consequence. Right? We have a debt ceiling debate. We have a conflict over the debt ceiling. You would think that that's all we have. That's as far as it goes. We're going to hit the debt ceiling. We're not going to hit the debt ceiling. But no. It implicates things that are happening around the world. And when they happen over in Europe and the value of the euro goes up, it helps to drive the value of the dollar down. The whole system has become so interconnected that it's like squeezing a balloon. If you try to squeeze it at one point, it's going to bulge somewhere else. And we can't necessarily predict where it's going to bulge. There are people who would like to just squeeze the balloon and choke it. But it turns out that you squeeze the balloon and guess what? It expands someplace else in a way that may be unpredictable and unmanageable and uncontrollable. And perhaps the only way you can control the situation is you don't squeeze the balloon. You don't exercise any control. And the whole thing has to be increasingly challenging and perhaps confusing and perhaps even impossible for the people that are managing or profess to be managing the economy. They can't do things without having unintended consequences. And this may be an example. The dollar has a debt ceiling debate. The euro goes up. The dollar goes down. The fiat dollar goes down as a result of the debt ceiling debate. The euro goes up. People would like their money to be worth more, though. Wouldn't you rather that your $50 bill had more value than it does today? Wouldn't you like to believe that if you had a stack of $10 bills in your wallet, wouldn't you like to think that the value was going to be more tomorrow or a week from now, a month from now, a year from now than it is today? Wouldn't it be a good idea if your salary, let's imagine you were making $50,000 a year and the value of the dollar increased and at the end of the year you're still making $50,000 but your purchasing power is $55,000? Workers, ordinary Americans, would like the value of their money to go up. But the government wants the value of the money to go down. And that's not just true for our government. It's true for the European government, the Chinese government, and all of the governments, certainly, that are involved in exports, want their currencies to become less valuable. And what's the result of that? The result is that the people are taking a pay cut. Instead of seeing the dollar appreciate and become more valuable, and you're making $50,000 a year, but after the dollar appreciates and becomes more valuable, you have take-home pay, you have the purchasing power of $55,000. You're still getting paid $50,000, but your purchasing power is increased. That's what people want. What do governments give us? They want to give us currencies that are of decreasing value. And that's exactly what they've done for your lifetime and mine. It's the reason why the dollar is today worth maybe a nickel or less as compared to what it was worth as late as 1971. Inflation takes the dollars down. It means you are working for less. You're still getting $50,000, which was big money back in 1970. You might be getting $50,000 today, but it's the equivalent of 5% of the purchasing power that $50,000 would have had back in 1971. Why do governments compete to see whose currency is worth less? And the idea is because it's good for exports. That's the idea. If our currency is worth less than Europe's currency, then people will buy American products rather than European products. And if China's currency is worth less than the American currency, people will buy Chinese products rather than American products. And there's a competition between the nations to see whose currency can be the most worthless. That's what's really going on. And you think about it, you look at it and say, my God, this is insane. Our government wants the dollar to be worth less. Europe wants the euro to be worth less. China wants the yuan to be worth less. Who wants their currency to be worth more? The people. Who profits from currency devaluation? And the answer is, if we're talking about exports, and that's always the idea, who actually profits when the value of the currency goes down? And the answer is the multinational corporations that are in a position to manufacture products in this country and export them and sell them in another country. by means of inflation and by means of devaluing the dollar or devaluing the euro or devaluing the Chinese yuan, by means of holding those currencies down, the people in the countries work for less. How do they profit from that? The argument is there'll be more jobs. But do the people collectively profit from depreciation, from inflation of the dollar or the any currency? Or is the profit left to the people who own and run the multinational corporations? In my opinion, the profit flows to the multinational corporations. And the governments are essentially saying, to heck with the people. They don't care whether you make money or not. The idea is to somehow manage to sustain a level of economic activity that might be extremely profitable for multinational corporations, but is ruinous for the American people in particular. We've gone through a recession recently, and we're still in it, the Great Recession, starting in 2008. What caused the Great Recession? The government and the Federal Reserve is trying to correct the Great Recession by means of quantitative easing, which means they're going to pump more money into the economy, more fiat dollars into the economy. And the presumption is that if they pump enough fiat dollars into the economy, we will generate more jobs and then we will have an economic recovery. But did we go into this recession because we had a shortage of currency in circulation? Or did we go into the recession because our government had shipped industries and jobs to Europe prior to the Great Recession? I believe the reason we're in that recession is because governments shipped our jobs. They said, global free trade, this is the way to go. And they sent our industries and jobs, many of them, not all of them, but many of them, they effectively sent them to foreign countries. They allowed them to pick up their plants and move them to a foreign country because the cost of labor was so low over there that they could build products for a fraction of the cost they could build them in the United States, but still sell them in the United States at the prices they had been charging previously, or at least prices that are similar to that, prices that didn't fully reflect the reduction in labor. And I believe it was the loss of productive jobs, jobs that actually produced something. I think that's what triggered the Great Recession. And it's from my perspective, this is simply evidence that the government wants the dollar to be worth less, in part so we can sell products overseas at cheap prices. And the way reason it's cheap is because with the dollar becoming worth less, wages become worth less. You might still be making $20 an hour, but it only has $15 an hour purchasing power. You are taking a pay cut when you are struck by inflation, and the government wants that. And who benefits from you taking a pay cut? And the answer is your employer and or anyone that you've loaned money to, and the government's the biggest borrower in the world. And all of this is confusing. It's hard to explain. It's hard to understand. It's hard to follow, and I get that. But it's part of the madness that comes with having a fiat currency. We are living in a world where governments compete to see whose currency is worth less. It's crazy. My money is worth less than your money. And other people say, oh no, our money is worth less than yours. It's insane. I'm Alfred Addis. This is Financial Survival. We'll try to deal with something more sane when we come back in a moment. I'm here with Melody Cederstrom. We'll be back shortly. Please stay tuned.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in an untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate in those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad-spectrum immune-boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Or take your chances with the bad boys. Call Apothecary Herbs toll-free, 866-229-3663, or online, thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here on Financial Survival with Melody Cederstrom. Program is brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. What else they need to know, Melody?
They need to visit our website, dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for the weekly newsletter. And, of course, our radio programs are archived there. And all orders this week will be, your names will be placed in our drawing for the end of the month for our Mint State 62 $10 Indian and, of course, a tube of 1 ounce silver eagles. If you have any questions for the program, you can email us questions@dgscoins.com, questions@dgscoins.com.
Okay, what's next? We've got a caller, George from Canada, Toronto. Oh, George, are you there?
Yeah, hi, Al. Listen, can you explain to me, okay, the Fed is keeping interest rates low. What's prevent other countries around the world from raising their interest rates?
Nothing. It's one of the great, it's the big problem they have. The interest rate situation to me is something of a fraud. They can print money and add it to the economy. They can take money out of the economy. They can control the supply of money within the economy. I won't say it's an absolute control, but they can do a great deal. They can pretty much manage the supply of money. But historically, when we had gold and silver for money, if they reduced the interest rate down to 1%, the creditors who had gold and silver to lend were pretty much stuck. They didn't have much choice. If the whole country went to 1% in interest rate being paid on gold and silver, you had two choices, and that was either sit on your gold and silver and do nothing, or lend it and make 1%. Might not be what you want. You might say, I should be getting 5%. Right? I'd rather be getting 5%, but you couldn't do anything because you couldn't easily move your physical money, gold and silver. You wouldn't want to trust it to a ship to take it across the Atlantic to Europe, or a ship to take it across the Pacific to China or Japan. It's risky business. If that ship sinks, you're losing a bunch of money. Even if you have insurance, there's a problem here. But once we go over to a fiat currency, you can now, and especially a digital currency, you can now move money across the oceans at the speed of light. Or not money, but currency. And as a result, when the government comes out, they said, ta-da, we're going to reduce interest rates because this will help Joe Sixpack to borrow money to buy another house and stimulate the economy. That's all very nice that they've lowered the interest rate, but what about the creditors? The creditors are no longer trapped in this country. As soon as we diminish diminish the interest rate, today the guy who's got some credit said, I'm not going to lend my money for 1%. You think I'm crazy? I know a place over there in Europe where I can get 10%, or maybe down in South America or in Africa, and I can get 10% return on my dollar.
Well,
what do you think he's going to do? Pardon me?
Can you tell me those places? I wouldn't mind investing the 10%.
Well, I'm using the 10%. I'm just pulling the money out. I'm just pulling it out as an example to illustrate the fact. It may be that, I'm not saying there's absolutely 10%. It may be that he can only get an extra 2 or 3% compared to what he can get here. But for a lot of people, that is a very significant concern. Doesn't sound like much when you're dealing with small
amounts on their fixed income.
Say again.
I say they're not getting anything on their fixed income, the retirees.
So the point is, when they reduce the interest rates, supposedly to stimulate the economy by encouraging people to borrow money, the problem they have is the money flees this country and it goes to other countries and it's actually loaned over there. There has been a boom for the BRIC countries and some of the third world countries that are beginning to jump out of their lower economic status. And that boom took place since our Great Recession began in 2008.
Right.
There's a good chance that the reason for that is because American banks, my understanding is that under quantitative easing, they loaned $2 trillion to major financial institutions in this country. But those major financial institutions are supposedly still sitting on about $1.8 trillion. I might have said billion I meant $2 trillion, of which $1.8 trillion is still in the bank vaults. That's what they claim.
They've loaned out. They've loaned out the rest overseas?
I think the $1.8 trillion that they're supposedly sitting on in the bank vaults, I think they loaned it out overseas. I think that's what's... I don't know this to be true, but I speculate that that's what laid the foundation for the accelerated economic activity in the BRICS, among the BRICS countries, for example. They've been going... They've been guns. Where'd they get the money? They got it from this country, from the banks. That said, even though they got the money from the United States government and from the Federal Reserve, and it's essentially free money for them, they sat back and said, "Well,
do that, make a few extra points."
Absolutely,
lend it out to small businesses in America.
That's what I think has happened. I can't prove it, but that's my, I can't prove it, and I may be mistaken, but that's what I think has happened. And it's happened because they have knocked the interest rate down so far that the banks are saying you got to be crazy to lend money at that amount, at that rate. We're not going to lend our money at that rate. It's irresponsible. It's imprudent for us to do that. Even though we got the money for free from the government, we're still not going to lend it to the taxpayers. We're going to lend it to people overseas that will actually pay us a decent return on investment. So my point in
all of this
is that the interest rate, by manipulating the interest rate, it works in the opposite way of what people suspect. We lower the interest rates, and you could say, hooray, I can get a house at a very cheap interest rate, except I can't find anybody to lend me any money. If they raise the interest rate, it would attract money back into the country. And yeah, you'd have to pay higher rates to lay hands on it. I'll give you that, but you could get some. It would be here. So
I understand.
The digital currency, we have essentially neutered the Federal Reserve's ability to manipulate interest rates in a conventional manner and then achieve the result they claim to be looking for. That's my opinion on it. Does that make any sense to you, George?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thanks for calling. Thanks for listening. What else we have, Melody?
We have a question coming in also. According to the Washington Times, the U.S. debt jumped a record $328 billion yesterday, and that was the first day that, of course, the federal government was able to borrow under the New Deal with Obama and Congress. The debt now equals $17.075 trillion, according to figures the Treasury Department posted online today. This $328 billion increase shattered the previous high of $238 billion that was set 2 years ago. Are we just digging a deeper hole of debt and eventually a bigger and bigger crash?
Yeah, of course that's what we're doing. We're just going deeper and deeper into debt. And who's going to pay it? The presumption is that we'll leave the debt to the children and the grandchildren. The presumption is, another presumption is, that we will restore economic vitality in this country and we'll make enough profits where we're going to be able to pay off the debt. We're going to get so rich, we'll all be able to pay off the debt. We'll pay off the debt, a couple of dollars. We'll pay out $2 for every one we owe you. Just wait, we'll be back. We aren't going to be back. Not until we get our industries back into this country. We have to produce something. You know, after they shipped industries and therefore jobs to foreign countries, and they got involved in global free trade and limited and reduced tariffs and essentially compelled a lot of businesses to vacate this country, after they did that, the government tried to conceal the problem by increasing the number of people who work for government, particularly at the state level. We shipped productive jobs to China or Mexico or India or any third world country where we relocated a factory. We shipped productive jobs over there, and we tried to replace them with government jobs in this country in order to conceal the loss. But those government jobs are not productive. They don't make homes. They don't make cars. They don't grow food. They are nothing but a glorified form of welfare. The difference between much government work, not all of it, but much of it, and conventional welfare is welfare, you get to stay home. With government, well, with a government job, you actually have to get up in the morning and go to work, then goof off all day and come back. Huh? That's the difference between government employment in many instances. I'm exaggerating, of course, but I'm trying to make a point. You can't replace a productive job with a non-productive job and expect that you're going to be able to hold the economy together. You can't do it and expect you're going to avoid a recession or perhaps even a depression. We have to have jobs that produce things. And those jobs have been sent overseas. So what are we going to do? We've got to get them back into this country before. I believe we have to get them back into this country before we will see an end to the Great Recession and perhaps an end to the Greater Depression. We're not going to be able to just manipulate our way out of this situation by injecting $85 billion a month into the economy. I mean, if it were possible to do that, it might be better off, really, to take the $85 billion instead of injecting it supposedly into the economy. Why don't they just use it to pay off some of the debt? It might do a better job. But we aren't going to succeed we aren't going to drive ourselves into an economic recovery merely by manipulating the currency supply, in my opinion. I don't think it can be done. I think it's a matter of the tail wagging the dog. I don't think the tail can wag the dog. If they want to get out of the recession, we're going to have to restore our tariffs, bring industries back into this country, bring jobs back into this country, and start producing. And when we produce something tangible that the world wants, then we're going to be able to add value in a way where the debts can be repaid, we can become more valuable, our money can become more valuable. We can get out of the recession, but we're not going to get out of it with just quantitative easing. I don't think that's going to succeed. So I'm rambling on this, Melody. You can.
Well, no, you're not rambling. And
I am to some degree, but remind me, tell me what the question was again. I kind of gotten away from the question.
Well,
remind
just
me
about
again.
The amount of debt that is being added to the.
Yeah, that was the other point. Yeah, the debt will never be paid. And it certainly won't be paid by government employees. They say, oh, we contribute to the national debt. We're helping to pay that off. Yeah, but you don't produce anything. You guys are just, that's just a paper contribution. It's not real. It's not going to really end the debt. You've got to produce something. That's point one. Point two, here, the debt ceiling. It's been $16,699,000,000,000 since May 19th. All right? That's when we actually hit the debt ceiling. On May 19th, and then it's stuck right there at $16,699,000,000,000, and it stayed there for 5 months. And then yesterday they said, oh, we got a new debt ceiling, and in one day, it jumped from $16,699,000,000,000 to $17,000,000,000,000, and I don't remember if you said
0.075.
All right, so and 75 billion. 17 trillion and 75 billion. It jumped, watch, 400 billion in one day. Huh? In fact, what they added was 412 billion during the 5 months from May 19th until October 19th or 17th. They added 412 billion. What's the point to this? The point is that we actually hit the debt ceiling 5 months ago. And the government has lied about it ever since and said, oh, the debt has remained at $16,699,000,000,000. That's where it's been for 5 months, and it hasn't moved an inch. And then in one day it jumps $412 billion or thereabouts. What was the drama all about that seemingly ended yesterday? If we could get through the past 5 months, even after we'd actually hit the debt ceiling on May 19th, why couldn't we get through another 5 months? Why couldn't we get through another 5 years? What was all the fuss about? You know? And how did we get through those 5 months, the previous 5 months, after we actually hit the debt ceiling, which is established by law? How did they continue to keep operating? First, with a big lie, and the lie was that the debt ceiling we never exceeded the debt ceiling, never got over $16,699,000,000,000. For 5 months, we were at the debt ceiling. The truth is we were over the debt ceiling, but they lied. This is lying in violation of the law. Somebody set a law and they said, here's the debt ceiling. You can't go any further than that. You got to do something. You have to act. When we get to the debt ceiling, you got to act. They didn't act for 5 months. Now that they have acted, fundamentally, all they've done is agree that they'll postpone the debt ceiling for another 5 months. It's mind-boggling. It's not just a situation where brilliant and intelligent people that are running government understand how to tweak the situation in ways that keep this thing running. It's beyond that. It's like it's a kind of madness, and they're holding it together. You got to give them credit for that. It's working for now, but there has to be a moment when finally we face reality. And someone's going to say, here's the debt ceiling, and when we get to it, something's got to be done. And if we don't do something, then there are going to be adverse consequences, and we have to take those adverse consequences. We have to accept them. We've earned them. We're going to get them sooner or later. But instead, we have a government that just postpones and postpones and postpones, and everybody knows what's going to happen. When the stuff finally hits the fan, it won't be a tablespoonful. It'll be a 5-gallon pail of stuff, and it might be a 50-gallon pail. It might be a 50-gallon drum. It might be 500 gallons, but it's not going to be a tablespoon or a teaspoon or even a cup. We will have put it off until finally it all comes at us at once, and it's not going to be fun. Take another break. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned.
countries have denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a KU band free-to-air satellite system from AVR. The AVR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click Satellite System.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Short.